People keep asking if I'm back, and I haven't really had an answer. But now, yeah, I'm thinking I'm back.
Hello, you're listening to the Burst Boss Scottish Football Podcast. We are back after a relatively long hiatus. It's not a full season preview that we're doing today. We're just having a kind of casual look back at some of the Scottish teams' fate, I suppose, in European competitions. I have with me a man who has been at some of these games, and I'm very excited to hear what he has to say. And I'm also here because I'm mainly just kind of checking on his mental health state and things like that. Callum Scott, how are you getting on?
I've been better, Gamba. That's to say the least. I mean, I think that it's almost been a complete change in the man that once was Callum Scott since the 19th of May. There's been a big change, and you rightly point out I have been at some of these games. I will also be in a different country come Tuesday and Wednesday in order to see a game which is no longer taking place. So I will also be in Belgrade at the same time as the Connors Key Nomads. Let me repeat that. Connors Key Nomads. That's right. If you wouldn't have heard of them before. They absolutely pummeled Kelly. Well, they didn't pummel us, but they put us out. Are playing Partizan Belgrade. So I will be in Belgrade in the same day as that game. However, I don't think I will be at the game. It was my understanding that Kamala was supposed to be playing Partizan Belgrade on that date. Hence why I must have just got my dates mixed up. So we'll see what happens.
But, you know, I mean, obviously, it must be a Mandela effect of some sort. You know, you thought the Kilmarnock were going to be playing Partizan Belgrade, but clearly something has changed in the quantum realm of some form, which has now meant that this game is no longer taking place.
Yeah.
It's not that you're wrong. It's just that, you know, something else has happened when it comes to this particular game of football. Anyway, You did see Kilmarnock play Connors Key, was it? Apparently, yeah. there were some other European games that took place. We're going to kind of touch on them and go through how some of the other teams have progressed in Europe. But I feel it's probably best to start off with the shit show that was Kilmarnock's two-legged affair against Connors Key. Callum, you saw both legs, I'm right in thinking.
Yes. I made the trip to Wales, yep.
I know how the answer to this is. I'm going to try and ask a fairly open-ended question here and just say, I mean, how was the trip down there? Did you feel that, you know, you, Kilmarnock, for anyone that's been under a rock when it comes to Scottish football in the past few while, won the away leg 2-1, they managed to lose the home leg 2-0. The away leg last minute winner, how was the game? Was there any kind of like fear that it was going to go after you'd got the result away from home?
I mean, it's just the first way of down in Wales was just absolutely class. I mean, I was there with all my best mates and guys that had been to the football way and stuff, and it was absolutely brilliant, the number of Kilmarnock supporters that were down there. It's rubbish because you can't put a figure on it, because the game, they only let in 1,400 people, most of which were Kilmarnock supporters anyway. I think they're lucky if there's maybe like 200 or 300 Connors Key fans there, if that. It was all Kilmarnock supporters on the home end. However, that didn't really make a difference anyway, because the stewards were just letting you into the away end. I actually, fortunately, was able to come into possession of an away end ticket, so I was one of the few, which I was quite proud of. It was good down there, and people were kind of panicking and stuff because, you know, we didn't really create that much, but we're kind of not on the ball side to side. But I was like, not really that big a deal for me. And then when Connors Key went up 1-0 there, in the away leg, I was like, ah, it's all right. I was like, don't get me wrong, I was embarrassed, because I was like, Ken, these guys are not up to anything. You know, I was only, what happened was they just launched it up the park and Broadfoot sells the jersey. They cross it and Taylor puts it in his own net, so it wasn't even a shot and goal anyway. But I was like, right, Ken, it's all right. I was embarrassed though, as I said, because I'm like, this is, these guys are murder that we're playing. We all respect if that is any kind of form of respect in that comment. I mean, like, I had no fears. I was like, doesn't matter, we'll take them back to Rugby Park regardless next week anyway, and we'll beat them. I've got, even if we do get beat here, we draw or we win, I goes, we'll beat them at Rugby Park on Thursday. I've got no, absolutely nobody will tell me otherwise about that.
Mm-hmm.
Then we get the penalty. We get a lucky penalty to the left back. I don't know what he's doing, because he doesn't need to make that challenge. Berkey wins the penalty. Brophy puts that away. And then we get the last minute winner, which was good scenes in that, and it was quite funny. And then that was that. I was wrongly, obviously. I was thinking, well, that's a tie over. They're never going to come to Rugby Park and score two goals in 90 minutes. Never in a million years that's happening.
And even if they do, I mean, Kilmarnock will just... They will score, do you know what I mean? Like,
Exactly. Yeah. So, I'm like that, nah. No way in a million year. In a one-off game in that, you never know, but I'm like that. They're not going to come to Rugby Park and score two goals in 90 minutes. There's no chance that's ever happened. Because if they have to come out, that would suit us as well, because we're allowed to can play through, because they just sat in against us, which I've got absolutely no issues with, because that's what you've got to do. Anyway, so it gets to the game at Rugby Park on Thursday, and it was the atmosphere around the ground was brilliant. I seen all the families in that back. It was a right good crowd there. I announced it as 8,500, 9,000, but there was more than that in there for sure. And it was brilliant. Obviously, all Kilmarnock supporters, fans turned out. All we had to do was not get beat 2-0, and that's exactly what we did.
Yes.
And I was so upset. I could see it unfolding. That's the worst of it. I don't know what kind of sounds were coming out of me. I don't know, man. I was giving off some weird vibes in the ground, because I was really uneasy. And when we got to halftime at 0-0, I goes, nah, I don't like this at all. And then my brother and my dad are like, no, it's all right, got to come out second half. I goes, nah, it's not happening. If any of you have got to regress here, because the only way I can look at it is how I felt there, and that must be how Rangers and Celtic feel, getting 0-0 at half time to a team against Kilmarnock. You know what I mean? It gives us a lift, it makes them think, oh crap, here we go, the more pressure. It was so important that we had to score, and we didn't do that. Comes out, Dicker absolutely gets done for the goal. Broadfoot gets out jumped. Jimmy McDonald, I don't know what he's doing. Backman's in goal, he saves that. And Broadfoot and Dicker don't help him. It should have been cut out 3-4 times before that anyway. But it was a good wee move for Connors Keat, to be fair, I'll give him that. And then next thing we're thinking, right, Jesus, what the hell's happening? We need to get back up and score. We miss a really good chance with O'Donnell. Then it goes, and then next thing, long ball over the top, and I goes, he's got to score here, or we've got to give away a penalty. And that's what happened. Finley, penalty, red card. And I'm like, that's us. I said, he's got to put it straight in the middle. That's what he done. And I'm like, I can't believe what I'm seeing here. But still, a goal for us at that point would have been enough to get through. It would have been enough to get to extra time. And yeah, I would have fancied us in extra time. Who knows, actually. At that moment in time, I was like, just give us a goal. Take my extra time. They'll run out of legs. Nah, they held on, and fair play to them. It's quite funny, because the Connors Keat kind of social media guy was directly behind me at the game. And it was the kind of dregs of the press, if you get me, because like the press bit's really busier towards the other side, but it was a kind of like the last kind of seats, and just before the broadcast guy sat, and then he was right behind me, and then when the full time whistle went, we were walking out, and then I turned round and he was celebrating, and then he must have thought, oh no, here, lad, I'm going to get dogs abuse like that here. But I'm glad to say I was a bigger man, and I was so angry, but I still turned around. I'm not doing this for any sympathy likes in social media.
I'm a Kilmarnock fan, but...
No, but I turned around and I shook his hand and said, well done, and my brother and my dad done the same, and I think everybody else in the road in it. But it was just quite funny, because the young guy must have thought, oh no, here we go, I'm going to get dogs abuse here. But even though we were so angry and that, we're still able to turn around and know how much that meant to them and say, hey, well done, all the best kind of thing, and move on for that. And as I was walking out, which was quite funny, Cammy Bell was, he was at Radio Scotland, and he just looked, because I was the first one to come out of the room, and he looked at me and I looked at him. Not as if we knew each other or anything, but it was quite funny, he just looked, and he was disappointed as me, and both just looked at each other and shook our heads. It was just a really, really odd feeling, and it was so disappointing. I'll never ever get over that result. I'll never forgive the club for taking that away from us to go to Belgrade and play against a proper European side. It's just totally embarrassing, to be honest.
It is something that I was going to just come on to. You know, it's happened, and Kilmarnock, you know, are now out. You know, people have booked up to go to Belgrade and things like that. I mean, it was an amateur team who have struggled, as we've said, and has been well documented in the Scottish Challenge Cup against teams in the first, well, the second, third, and fourth tier of Scottish football. Now, obviously, there's the new manager. We haven't been on and spoken about this, Callum, since Angelo Alessio has been appointed manager. Mm-hmm. His second result in is, you know, something that's not great. Mm-hmm. Is it down to him? Is it down to the players? Is it down to the club? Because, I know that we kind of briefly... I remember kind of at the end of last season, we had a wee thing where it was the two of us were speaking, and we were saying, you know, was Clark, when he was in charge, had he really fixed things at Kilmarnock, or was he a kind of... Was he treating a symptom and not a cause, maybe? Or do you feel it's just the players... I mean, the players should have been good enough, but, I mean, who does the issue lie with? Or is it one of these things where it's just such a clusterfuck, there's too many... You don't have enough fingers to point the blame at people. What do you feel?
Very good question, Gamba.
I know it was kind of ranting question all over the place, but like, no, who's like to blame
that.
Basically?
I like that.
I mean, who are we singling out here? Who's the one person to blame for this?
Right, I'm going to give two kind of answers here, right? Because I agree with the latter that it's probably a combination of everything. It's the fact that since it's come out is that Clark apparently made up his mind that he was leaving Kilmarnock at the end of the season regardless of the Scotland job or not. So surely the board should have known that, and we should have had somebody appointed there and then. Like, mm-hmm. Basically, Ken, I think it was 2.5-3 weeks before we appointed the manager. And then that he was only in the door for a week, and then it was I think he was just in the door before pre-season training started. So, whether I know managers do their research and that, I know that I've ever been in a position of interviewing a manager for a role, but I'm sure that they've got to have a knowledge of the squad. So, but you would have liked him in for a wee bit before that, so that he could identify what and what he needed to change. But then again, the other argument to that would be he's not got to see the players until pre-season anyway, right? But we lose a lot of players, so we appoint Alessio a wee bit late. It's something completely left field, which I support. And I was like, this is brilliant, something totally different. Shows ambition, shows a couple mm-hmm. to move in a certain way. This guy's Conte's assistant everywhere. Italy, Napoli, Chelsea. And Conte wanted to take him into Milan, and he took the Kilmarnock job instead. So I was like, no, this is fine. I was happy with it, something unknown, but always my fear was that foreign managers coming to Scotland don't tend to work. Do I think that's the actually anything to do with the manager himself? No, I don't think it is. I think it's to do with Scottish mentality. You look at Le Guin and that, who's branded a laughing stock. Guy was one of the most highly rated coaches in Europe when he took the Rangers job. And he's gone for dealing with European guys in the continent who have got a totally different mindset to football than what we do, totally different culture about what they would do pre and post match, to come over to try to manage guys like Barry Ferguson, Chris Boyd, who does he care about Rangers or that part? The guy maybe doesn't know as much about Rangers as you, but he sure as shit knows more about football and how it's played in the continent than any of you's put together. So then he was hounded out of Rangers because the players just don't play for them. They don't like new ideas. See what Le Guin was doing at Rangers 12 years ago now, or whatever it was. That's what every team in... 13 years ago, Christ, now it would be. That's what every team in Europe's now... Every big team in the world's trying to do now. You know what I mean? Like, try to change the dietary stuff, and nah, they weren't for it. Dyla the same at Celtic. He's got no pals in the media either, so... Mm-hmm. It's a free hit at him. Probably one of the nicest guys you would meet in football, Ronnie Dyla. Know that should excuse poor managerial ability, but I don't think he does have that. You've seen that, he done what was really required of him at Celtic, and he was pretty much a dodgy handball off a Titan Celtic to potentially win a treble, which has become so frequent of late. And you've seen that, I think the stats were on the dial, he was able to cut, I think it was an average of about 3 kilos off the squad, like per player, which is like the equivalent of half a stone, which is unbelievable when you think you're doing that to professional football players. But then other people, to the argument of that, say he was taking too much off them because they weren't fit, they weren't what they were made, they weren't what they because they were losing so much weight, they weren't fit, but I could only see that as a good thing, that he was cutting the weight, even kind of to elite pros. It's easy for X, Y and Z to lose half a stone if you diet for a few weeks, but a professional football player, it's a hard thing to do, and he was able to do that to the full squad essentially. And Tierney flourished under him, it was him that gave him his chance. What I'm getting at here is that I think that the players are to blame. I think that it'd be different if we were 9-10 games into the guy's tenure and they'd lost the dressing room. But see, regardless of what happens, basically the Connors key second leg was a one-off game. If you see it that way, you're back at Rugby Park, big crowd, all you have to do is not get beat, you're fine. Like, there's only so much a manager can do there. Like, the players have got to take responsibility for 90 minutes to not get beat by a bunch of part-timers, you know what I mean? They take all the credit last year, and rightly so, but they've got to be absolutely criticised for this, absolute shambles, and it's the players that are to blame, minus Chris Burke and Stuart Finlay for me. They were the only ones that looked like they cared and tried to do anything. Obviously, Finlay ended up getting sent off, but he's the guy that's, you know, he's basically trying to be the playmaker for centre back. He's carrying the ball out and trying to make things happen. Nobody else was doing that. Nobody else was, everybody was hiding. And Burke was just typical Chris Burke, just absolutely, he was excellent. And the right hand side, only player, the only kind of creative spark we had. So, I think the players are to blame. I think that Alessio's lost the dressing room already, by what I'm hearing and stuff. Don't think the players played for him. That was the fear at the start, and it's a fear now. The only way that he will recover from this is if the board back him to sign about six of his own players in, because one thing's for sure is that these guys in the dressing room just now are now got to play for him, which is really sad, and I feel for him. I really do feel for him. Guys come over here and having to manage guys that think they know better. Gary Dicker, shameful leadership in that game at Connors Quay at home. Like, that guy's might be the captain, you know what I mean? I know it's easy to play the chess beating role in that, but we would have killed to lead Kelly out in Europe, you know what I mean? And then he's sitting there, he's post-match interviewing that after the game, but didn't look like he gave anything on the pitch, which was really, really disappointing. It looked like he was getting out to prove the manager. I was going to say prove the manager wrong, but like, it just looked like he was getting out of I'll show him, you know what I mean? Like, no, in a good way. Like, it'd just be like, let's see. That's the way I took it. Folk will say I kind of question a player's professionalism, but at the end of the day, I look at it, and those 11 players should never be beaten by the 11 guys that Connors Quay had lined up.
They're professionals, and Connors Quay aren't, so exactly. I think you can.
I mean, I know scalps happen, I don't doubt that. Like, of course they happen, and the argument is as well that Celtic and Rangers should be saying that our 11 players should never be getting beat by Kilmarnock. Player for player, absolutely. But all we had to do was not get beat 2-0, and that's happened. Like, that's the way you look at it. And there were some clown supporters. Oh, all we had to do was sit in against Connors Quay and take nothing each. You're like, right, get it, come on. I was like, what? I'm like, these guys are part-timers, man. All we had to do was score one goal when the tie was over. I don't know what they're talking about. What you want to go and play two banks of four and, like, get, I mean, like, against a team like Connors Quay at Rugby Park?
Catenaccio.
Exactly. Like, come on. Like, fair enough, in hindsight, I would have taken nothing each now, but all we had to do, and it was the right approach we took to the game in the first half, all we had to do was score and the tie was over. And level-headedly, looking back, when you look at the first half, we actually played a lot of good football and missed a lot of gilt-edged chances, which have cost us. Having said that, Connors Quay missed a sitter after 5 minutes, the guy literally missed an open net. The warning signs were there. But after that, we kind of grew into the game and we created chances. Greg Taylor missed two absolute sitters, which is falling at the wrong guy, you know, a left back, but he's still a professional football player, he should be able to take one of them. And I think O'Donnell hits the post, keeper makes a couple of good saves, Burke too short and across, so, and if he got it in, Brophy's got an open net. But at the end of the day, Connors Quay had two shots on target in 180 minutes and beat us 3-2 in aggregate. So Come on.
I mean, I don't really know where to go from here with this. How do you see the season going?
Honestly, Gamba, just what I've said there, I think that the only way... What's alarming is, we're recording this on Saturday, the 27th of July, right? So, a week past on Thursday was when Connors Key knocked us out. Mm-hmm. Most embarrassing result for so many reasons. In regards to supporters and that, disappearing season ticket sales, just club moving, 18 months of hard work out the window in 90 minutes. We've not signed a player. We've not signed one player for that absolute shit show last Thursday night. It's totally alarming. The only way the manager, I said, was got to work. And I feel for the manager because I honestly do not blame him. But equally, if somebody else was in charge, yes, I think we would have got through. But that's more on the players. The players just aren't playing for him, which is embarrassing after two games. Well, a game, because we're not playing for him the second game. We've not signed a player. So the board haven't backed him to go. Bowie said there's a transfer budget there larger than last year and that. We've signed a goalie on loan for Juve that's no had a game yet. And we've signed that El Marquini for the second tier in Dutch football. Who looked kind of tidy, not in the ball about, but it just looks like a combination of power and dicker. We need a number 10. We need at least two wide players. And we need about two or three strikers. Because all we've got is Brophy and Young and Scammon. And Brophy's no scored for open play for January. I don't know. But having said that, I think that Agüepong that was at Hibs last year, he will sign probably this weekend. But that's all I know of. But that's no enough time. You know what I mean? We play Rangers a week tomorrow. The basis of a good squad there, but it's not been tightened up. And I really do feel the worst for that Rangers game. It's a must win. See if we could beat the Rangers game 3-0 or something, 3-4-0. He's away. He's got to be away. I know. And that's no me. That's no me, like, wanting him away. I just think that we've got to cut our losses here because those players will not play for him. So either go out and let the guy sign his own players, which we haven't done, or if we get pummeled next week for Rangers, he's got to go because the current players just will not play for him. So who knows? Who knows? I don't know. And what the point I'll make is, again, the media are out to get him, like the same as Dyla. I know I'm saying he should go now, but I'm not blaming him. I'm blaming the players. But it's easier to get rid of one guy than 10 guys, you know what I mean? That's the only way you can look at it. Unless that day the board can come out and back him. There was an article, Gordon Parks, the other week there, shameful, totally shameful, calling for him. It was xenophobic, you know what I mean? Like, all this pish about mozzarella and all that, you know what I mean?
You're talking to probably one of the very few people in Scotland that will get very angry about the kind of stereotypes of it.
No, what is this guy playing at? Is it just acceptable to just come out and do that? And then all this, pastas and pizzas will only help change Kilmarnock's fortune. What are you talking about? Right, so
I want to do I've been rewatching The Sopranos recently, and I want to do that. I want to go in that like kind of Italian kind of like you know the Christopher Columbus Day episode where there's like all the protests against it. Yeah, yes. I feel like Silvio in that episode when they're going on about all these stereotypes about Italians. I'm gonna lose the rag, so don't.
Can I tell you what it is? It's anti-Italian discrimination. Columbus Day is a day of Italian pride. It's our holiday. And they want to take it away.
Fuck them.
I'm gonna mute my mic while you're talking about this article. Okay, just say what you're gonna say, and if you don't hear anything from me, you know that I'm shouting in the background.
No, I'll not get into much depth about that article. It was basically just saying that after two games.
But the thing is, it didn't matter what nationality this guy was. He would have written that article unless he was basically probably a native English speaker.
Yes, absolutely.
You think?
Uh-huh. Yeah. Because saw this, saw the foreigners, they don't know this and that. Ken, guy's good enough to coach Chelsea, Juventus, Napoli, an Italy national team, but he can't coach bloody Gary Dicker, Eamon Brophy, Greg Taylor, come on. So he's going out and saying all this absolute nonsense, and all I'll say is some of the things, like, they're valid concerns, I'm no ever getting away from that, but all I'll say is, could you imagine for 1 minute if there was a Scottish based manager in charge of that team, right, that you beat for Connors Key, and the papers were out the next day saying he has to go? Would that happen? No. Why would it not happen? Because you get pals in the media. Could you, like, I remember we were getting beat, like, in our first month of the season, we get beat 4-0 at Hampy Dundee, 4-0 at Hampy Ross County, right?
Yep, the podcasts are still available. You can listen to what you were saying on there, and you can actually think about the media reaction at the same time as well. I mean, it's all well documented.
Exactly. And then further along the line, we get beat 5-2 at home for Partick Thistle, right? Like into the November thing. Mm-hmm. And then we get beat 5-1 at Tannadice for bottom of the league Dundee United, right? Under Gary Locke. And the guys in the media were still trying to defend him. Oh, Lockie's a good football man, you've got to give him time. And that was Gary Locke that signed about 10 players that summer. You know, that was his team. And they were defending him.
Mm-hmm.
But, albeit, and I totally accept, it's the most embarrassing result in recent Scottish football history. I think it's up there with Progress, Niederkorn, I genuinely do think it is. And all I'll say is, if Ken, it's all this funny foreigner mentality for the media. As I say, if it was a Gary Locke, Gary Hall, whatever, in charge of that team, they would be defending them now and saying the board have to do more to back their manager and stuff, whereas it's all Alessio's fault, you know what I mean? But again, having said that, I do think that unless he's backed, he's got to go, and that's not on him, it's on the club and the players, it's not on him. I just think for his own good, he has to go, and for the good of the club, he has to go if he doesn't get backed. And we sign 5 or 6 of his own guys, because the players are now just only playing for him, and it's horrible. See, I don't like seeing it. It's horrible. It's almost like bullying. I don't like it.
How do you see the Rangers result going? Because I mean, that's going to be the first game of the weekend, kind of rematch of the last game of the last season. I think Rangers are, I mean, certainly from my own kind of perspective, Rangers are looking stronger than they did last season, I would say. I mean, I know they don't have Kent, but there has been some good signings that they've made. They've done quite well in their European games. We will kind of touch on how their games have gone. I mean, they won, I mean, again, team from Gibraltar, but of course, being a Celtic fan, I know what teams from Gibraltar can do when we're on this topic of European results. Won that 10-0. They've beaten Progress Niederkorn 2-0 in their first leg, which, you know, is, which will mean that if they have the same result over there, they've at least taken it to extra time. Rangers looking at, you know, probably as good as they did last season. Kilmarnock, dear God. Could you, I mean, you said you could see it be a 2 or 3-0, and then you think, like, then at that point, you know, it's kind of finished. It maybe won't be signed, sealed, and, you know, finished at that point, but you feel kind of that's the point at which it's done. Can you see that happening? Can you see them losing that game 3-0? Or, I mean, how do you honestly, how do you think it's going to go?
At this moment in time, I can genuinely see it, Rangers winning that pretty comfortably. Mm-hmm. I can see it happening. I think that you just look at all the variables here. Kilmarnock have regressed. Rangers have progressed. You know, Rangers feel good factor around the club again. You know, they genuinely believe that they can win the league. Kilmarnock, just a total cluster fuck everywhere behind the scenes as well, which begs the question, was Clark's performance on the pitch really covering up for what was still a shit show behind the scenes? Which I think could be right. Because you've seen the chief executive has resigned yesterday. Or 2 days ago, sorry. Kirsten Robertson, she is now, but she used to be Kirsten Callaghan, so she's resigned. So all this is leading to, you know, it's just not looking good. I think that over the last 18 months or so, Rangers have kind of built up some kind of rivalry with Kilmarnock, or vice versa, we've built up a rivalry with Rangers. they have got a massive point to prove against us, because bear in mind, they haven't beaten us in the league at Rugby Park since they've been promoted, which is quite interesting. I think that everyone's ready for them to just come out. But see, the only saving grace for me, and God bless Billy Bowie for this, whether it sits empty or no, I don't think it will though. I think they've already sold about 1,100 season tickets in at 1,300, which is good. The Moffat stand the Old Firm not having that is a massive, massive factor. I don't care what MD says, people say about filling it or no. There'll be healthy support in it, which is brilliant, and that's all I can ask for. But see, even if it's that empty, I'd rather that. You know what I mean? See when we play Rangers and Celtic, you've got two ends of the ground. They've literally got half the stadium, more fans. They've got half the stadium and more fans, because we're no selling at least in the West. And, you know, it's just a horrible atmosphere for us. I'm a big boy. I'm not get offended or anything. But, it's so intimidating. Never mind, for the fans and stuff. Never mind the players and that. It's just like another away game for them. It's just like playing at Ibrox or Parkhead. So see, just having all them at one end of the ground makes a massive difference. Seeing that at the Rangers game last game of the season, it was brilliant. Families and that going. My sister, who's she's married to a Celtic season ticket holder and stuff, and he's taking them to Celtic games. My two nieces, but Julie, you know, she's taking them to the Kelly game, and that's what that game was all about. You know what I mean? A good family atmosphere. And the club ended up building up to nothing, given we got 0-2 against Connors Quay, but still that day was brilliant. It was odd, just everything in the right direction. A real kid, Kamara, Cratton family club, you know what I mean? That's why I hear this when we get called mini Huns and stuff. There's nothing in it, you know what I mean? It's neat to be in the town to see how big the club actually is and how much it means to a lot of people. So I think genuinely Rangers only having the Chadwick end of the ground will make a big difference. That's a leveller. If they had the Moffat and Chadwick, you know, just with the atmosphere and stuff, getting the players on, I could honestly really see it being 3-4-0. The only thing that worries me is if Alessio was to go and be pragmatic about it and be defensive the same way that Clark approached the games, I think that we could sneak a draw or, you know, counter attack, get a wee win. But he wants to come out and play, and just the gaps that we're leaving are quite concerning. But equally, I just don't know. Rangers coming out, there's got to be gaps with them as well. I think there'll be goals in the game. I genuinely do. I think that there'll be a lot of goals in it either way. But at this moment in time, as the squad is just now, I can't see anything other than a Rangers win, and a comfortable Rangers win. When I mean comfortable, that could always be 2-0 as well. You know, just without any danger. But if he can get at least two or three signings in before then, get a wee bit of a feel-good factor back, you never know. You never know.
Yeah, you never know. You never know. I mean, I think I know, but yeah.
I know. Could be back to the Kilmarnock of old.
Well, this is the thing. I remember I was just to go on a tangent. I think this is kind of my job now in the podcast to kind of... to kind of talk about football and then just go on a massive tangent. I mean, I was listening to a very strange kind of podcast about how they measure time and things like that.
Oh, Jesus. Yes.
But it was interesting. They were saying it's when they measure it, it was to do with predetermination, and basically they were saying the way that time works is, you know, it's if you imagine things happening as a kind of film strip, and time's the kind of light of the projector kind of helping things go forward and things like that. Right. And I was like, yeah, okay, that's quite cool. That's quite an interesting analogy of how things work and things like that. But now I'm just convinced that now, I mean, we're sitting here, we're recording a podcast and you're ranting about Kilmarnock. I'm convinced that time's a circle. we've just come on just 360 degrees. And I was just like, yeah, well, this is a good, interesting scientific chat. And I'm just like, nah, but I mean, I've been listening to the podcast when it's been like this. I've then been on the podcast when it's been like this. We had that brief time, and now it's just back to this. So yeah, I just don't buy that at all. Anyway,
That's interesting. But one point I'd like to make in all seriousness is, hey, this is maybe the chip in the shoulder coming out here, but everybody, I genuinely believe that a lot of people in Scottish football want to see Kilmarnock back in their place, right? They want to see us back down fighting for relegation and stuff, or being mediocre. Sure as shit, that's what a lot of people in Kilmarnock want. The Rangers and Celtic supporters here, who have been grossly offended by the progression of the football club in the town. How that makes any sense, I've got no idea, but it does, and it's a real horrible bitterness towards us. But hey, see, even if we, and I made the point, even the European game, I couldn't envisage it happening, but I did say, see, for the last 2 months, 2 weeks, I mean, like, we'll never take that away from us. See that 18 months under Steve Clarke, when we're up competing with Rangers and Celtic, we're getting into games, Rangers and Celtic, we're fearing to play us, and the crowds are coming back and stuff. Hey, aye, it doesn't matter. I've seen that and I'm happy I've seen it. I've seen us win a major trophy in my lifetime. Well, technically two, but it was one and a half when we won the Scottish Cup, so that doesn't really count. But at the end of the day, I've seen us compete at the top end of the league, and I've seen us win a domestic cup. So nobody can take that away from us. And those 18 months under Clark really were just a total dream. And as I say, regardless of what happens next season, that will always live with me. And Ken folk will say, I show you trophies for it, but it doesn't matter. I've seen us totally compete with Rangers and Celtic, you know, right, and seen how much it means to Rangers and Celtic if and when they did get a result against us, which, as I say,
Scott Brown's last minute winner at Rugby Park's probably one of the best celebrations, well, certainly one of the best celebrations I had. I would have put that as probably one of my favourite moments of the season from last year, had there not been the treble and then Edwards scoring at Hearts. I mean, you know, it did mean a lot, and it was because of the team that Kelly had. I mean, again, I don't think I've really spoken to you about this, but one of my kind of favourite kind of funny kind of things from the kind of Clark run was, I remember I got a message from yourself. I think you sent it to myself and Lewis Kempf, gone but not forgotten. Saying, what was the lowest points tally Celtic won the league with? And like, I remember going, like, this probably would have been the season we got to last 16 in the Champions League. And I remember stopping and remember going to Lewis, like, he's genuinely trying to size up if Kelly can win the league this year. And we both kind of looked at each other and were like, well, and I think we figured out it was around about, I think you would have needed 80 points to beat Celtic in the league that year. And I don't think Kelly were that far off it last season. I don't think it was massively off it.
I mean, it's funny because, I mean, you get back and you think, aye, ridiculous it is. But it's just, that's what that Clark team done to you, see, come December time, you were thinking, you never know, man. And honestly, that's why I'm putting it on record now. Folk will be laughing and that, and hey, absolutely, let them laugh. But genuinely, there was a wee part in me, a wee boy in me, believing that, hey, you never know what can happen here. Like this has gone too well. Like, could it go the full way? Because it was just that night, and it never even crossed our minds, even though we're sitting second, third. It was just that night that Celtic drew with Motherwell. Rangers get beat by
Aberdeen.
Was it Aberdeen? Aye,
it was Aberdeen. Yeah, because I was listening to the Celtic game on the radio. I was driving home from work, and the Aberdeen result was coming in, and it was Liam McLeod just went, you know the way things are going. Of course, and Callum, we don't know the way that things went that night.
Aye, that's it. And then we beat Livingston, and then it just turned out that, and nobody ever thought that. Folk said before the game, and one of my mates had a bet on it, I think. But I think he had Motherwell to beat Celtic opposed to the draw. And he had that so that Kelly would be top of the league. And everybody just had a joke about it, and then it actually happened. And that, Ken, this wasn't October, you know, September. This was 2 weeks into December. We went to Parkhead and we get pumped 5-0. But we went to Parkhead in the middle of December, top of the league. Right, you know what I mean? It was, right, that's the way you look at it. And I'm certain we were top of the league again Come the end of December, because I think we played like two more games in Celtic, and then Rangers beat Celtic in Old Firm. I think we were top of the league into the new year maybe as well, and I'm like, brilliant. But it was just a total derail what happened. Jordan Jones signs a pre-contract at Rangers, Greg Stewart signs for Aberdeen, and you're thinking, oh no. But then again, see that night we beat Rangers 2-1 when Jones scored again. That night I thought, what is going on here, man? If we can lose those key players, Rangers are on the up, they just signed Defoe and that, the 10, what they would like to think was our best player office, and they come to Rugby Park and they're up 1-0, and we come back and beat them 2-1 again, and you're thinking, hey, what the hell's going on here? And it was surreal, and it was honestly cloud nine. And then we drew with Aberdeen on the Saturday, And then we get beat by Hearts, and then I think we went on a game we hadn't won in like 6 games or something that totally derailed the season. I genuinely believe, had Greg Stewart stayed at Killie, we could have really challenged for second, at least.
Mm-hmm.
I honestly believe that. Him leaving really lost with no creativity once he left.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel bad. I think we are 39 minutes, 40 minutes into the podcast now, and... And I feel bad, Gamba. I feel bad for the listeners' ears. They probably won't get after this. I mean, all we've done is talk about Killie, and I've kind of relived that last 18 months. But I could speak about this all day, but it's probably best we move on. Unless there's anything else you want to ask me, please ask me something else. Please ask me.
have you caught any of the other European games? Who do we want to talk about? If we're kind of doing a wee bit of review, I know we're kind of halfway through Celtic, Rangers and Aberdeen's other ties. Do you want to talk about Rangers, the revenge against Progress?
Yes.
2-0.
Yeah.
Good result. Again, time is a circle. They should surely see it out against the team from Luxembourg, shouldn't they?
I mean, you would like to think. I definitely do think, though, that just this Rangers team under Gerrard, it's just something different, man. It's
mm-hmm.
Whether folk can question Gerrard kind of tactically at times and that, but what'll carry a lot of weight for him. But I think his tactics at times have been spot on. By the way, I'm not saying that he isn't a tactician, but I'm saying that he's as liable for tactics as the rest is. But he's it's just that presence and stuff. You know what I mean? It's Steven Gerrard, like arguably one of the best players that's ever played the game. Like just players want to play for that. Like, look at the players they've attracted. You know what I mean? I think Rangers are on for a decent season. By the way. I just think I've run the way that's going. It's you could arguably even say that Celtic have regressed, Rangers have progressed again.
So it's probably
only got to be tasty, and I think that Rangers will be into the next round, and they'll play the Danish side, who I can't really pronounce on them.
Midtjylland,
yep. They'll play them, and I think that they will go through that as well. I think they'll do all right again this year, Rangers. But see, it's one of them, like. You obviously want them to get to the group stages for kind of coefficient and stuff, right?
Mm-hmm.
But see, as a Rangers supporter, you might see European nights at Ibrox and that. But I don't think it would be a bad thing. This is just my own opinion. If they, you know, like if they didn't make the group stages and Celtic did, because all they have to worry about is their weekend game. All they have to worry about is no distractions. If they really want to win the league, I genuinely think the best thing for them is not to progress in Europe, as mad as that sounds. But if they want just in a healthy season and competing again and, let's say, bring European nights back to Ibrox, and I absolutely... Obviously, you want to win everything. There's no doubt about that. But for Rangers to have a right good chance to win the league this year, I think European football would be a distraction.
Well, I mean, it's certainly one of these things where I think they will go into this tie against Midtjylland. I cannot see them losing again. I mean, like, it's just not happening. I think they'll go into against Midtjylland, and then they'll have a final. It's a playoff round, isn't it? From there,
yeah.
Midtjylland aren't going to be easy opposition. I know that they have done quite well in Europe. I believe Alex Fyachenko's there.
Yes.
Used to play with Celtic, and if I'm right in thinking, I think they might have knocked an English team out of the Europa League qualifiers. I think it was Southampton.
Interesting.
Quite a few years ago. I say quite a few years ago. Actually, not that long ago. So yeah, I mean, it'll be interesting to see how they get on, and of course they will have one more round after that. It's incredibly I've spoken about this before. It's incredibly difficult to go from the first round of qualifying in the Europa League to the actual tournament, and I think Rangers are one of very few, if not the only team to have done it since they made the changes.
Mm-hmm.
If they were to do it 2 years in a row, would be an absolutely incredible achievement, and I don't think that can be understated. And of course, knowing my allegiances, I'm spitting that sentence out. But I'm 100% serious about it. You know, to go through four rounds of qualifying for the Europa League, it's incredibly difficult.
Aye.
So if they were to do it again, it would be incredible. They've certainly got a really good opportunity to get certainly to the third round. I don't know much about Midtjylland. As I was saying, it's based on results from years ago with squads that aren't at the team now, and I only really know one player that they've got, so who knows. I think they have certainly a better chance of qualifying than maybe Aberdeen would. It'd be interesting to speak to Ryan Crombie. I think he knows how their chances are going to go. One each draw in Georgia. There was, speaking to people on the podcast and previously on the podcast, this was painted as quite a bad result, the one each draw out in Georgia. Obviously, they beat the team from Finland that I'm not even going to try and pronounce. Romanovi or something like that.
Two players in that Finnish team, by the way. Antonio Ruggiero, who never played for Kilmarnock, really, we signed him on a pre-contract for Inverness goalkeeper, and then I think he went to County, and Mohamedou Sissoko. Who you will remember for his almost assisting Hooper in the League Cup final.
Yes, absolutely, absolutely. So he sees about eight people to pass to in front of him. I'm just going to pass this square to a guy that scored about 30 goals in the league this year. Good stuff.
Hey, what I'll say is
it worked. How they kept a clean sheet that game, didn't they? So it worked.
That, as strange as that sound, that thing there won us the cup that day, man. Just the luck and everything, just that ball and Cammy Bell getting off to that start straight away, that's what that won us a cup. Hooper doubt, but that's less about Kilmarnock, not just that. And just funny to see him do back playing in Scottish football, which is class.
How do you think, we're saying Rangers definitely into the third round, incredible achievement if they manage to qualify again. Can you see Aberdeen progress? And obviously they've got one each draw against this team that I'm not even going to try and pronounce, from Georgia. I mean, they've had a fair... I mean, if you want a European tour, I mean... Northeast, Southeast. I mean, the next team they're going to have to play is going to be a Portuguese team, and then their final game will be against an Icelandic team, right?
Yeah, well, that's exactly a European tour, do you know what I mean? The Empire. But, look, just funny what you're saying there about people thinking that it's like...
Oh, the next game's in Croatia, isn't it? I'm talking nonsense. Sorry. If they get past... They've been robbed. They'll just have to get to the group stages to complete the European tour. Sorry, Callum. On you were going.
No problem at all. But funny you're saying, obviously, it's been kind of painted as not a great result. Aye, that is a good result. See, any point away from home in like European football has got to be classed as a good point, regardless. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, basically, as daft as this sounds, a one-each draw over there is equivalent to a 2-1 in normal. Like, you know what I mean? How much weight the away goals have got and stuff. Like, no, I think that's an alright result for Aberdeen. Gives them back to Pittodrie, and again, all they really need to do is score. They'll obviously have to keep their clean sheet as well, but I think that the only worrying thing is there'll be a wee bit of worrying signs in because they conceded that late goal for the Finnish team at Pittodrie after they were cruising, so they're probably a bit maybe a wee bit of doubt in there whether they can see out the clean sheets or no. But no, I think that's an alright result, particularly in Georgia, as has been quoted as a graveyard for Scottish football in recent media reports. No, I think that's a fine result for Aberdeen, I would back them to go through. Try and get an early goal at Pittodrie, I think it should be fine. But you never know. I mean, teams capable of going to school as well. But it's my understanding that the Georgian team they got a dodgy penalty according to McInnes. But I think McInnes thinks every decision against them is dodgy. But no, I think that's an alright result. That's fine.
Yeah. Again, as I said, Aberdeen going from the first qualifying round again, so it will be an incredible achievement if they do and end up making it all the way. But again, I know how Aberdeen's recent results in Europe have certainly been. Rijeka, it was again, isn't it? They're coming up against a team that they somehow managed to beat at home when nobody else could.
Uh-huh, that's it. That's it. Beat them 3-0, wasn't it? I'm sure it was.
I think it was it 2-1 out there. I'm sure they beat them 2-1 out there, and it was nothing each at home. Or was that Groningen? Because they beat Groningen, didn't they? Or was that that one? Because they've had some decent scalps recently, Aberdeen. I remember. Well, I say recently, it was probably like 5 years ago.
Let's see. I was certain because it was a massive surprise when they went over there.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
But maybe it was just the result in itself. But I remember them. No, it was 3-0 they won.
3-0, oh my goodness.
And then drew them 2-8 at Pittodrie.
Wow.
In 2015, aye, it was. I just double checked it there. Aye, 3-0.
All right, cool. So if they get through against the Georgians, Aberdeen are into the playoff round. Good stuff.
Let's hope so. Let's hope so. Aye.
Speaking of, you said Aberdeen's 1-1 draw was a decent result. Celtic 5-0 at home. That's all right.
No, good enough.
Caldrew. I'm gonna say. Yeah. I mean. Considering how the result against Sarajevo went, you know, it was pretty close. Not pretty close, but you know, they did put up a wee bit of resistance. Sarajevo, it was, I mean, maybe a wee bit physical, and the results were maybe slightly closer. But yeah, I mean, 5-0, you're happy with that. Griffiths scoring, I mean, I was just delighted for this.
Great to see, man. Brilliant to see. Just him back, basically first game back. Nah, he's scoring an absolute wonder goal as well. And it was good to see how much it meant to him. Obviously it did. And it's just what to call out a few posts now. I think it is pretty horrible to see some of the stick that he's been getting for certain clubs. Just all this whataboutery. I mean, the guy had his demons, man. Let him go on with it. He's come back. That's what annoys me, is just folk that can't take anything on the park. You know what I mean? Folk on the pitch are a different person to what they're after and that, and you like a wee bit of bite in the park. Well, no, Griffiths, I've given him dogs abuse and all that before. You know what I mean? But he's a good player, man, and he's a cracking player, and you want to see the best players back playing for Scotland and get him into the national team again. And nah, I'm delighted to see Griffiths back, and I really hope he goes on to have a good season. And I think he will. He's just getting that goal early on, brilliant. Does wonders. Just to get like you don't want it going on 3-4 games before you get a goal, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
He gets in, because folk can cause it, is he past it, whatever. Nah, he scores an absolute belter of a free kick, first game back, you can't argue with that. Thrilled for him.
Yeah, I mean, I'm delighted. Good, excellent, good to hear. You know, for himself, you know, absolutely delighted he's back. I really liked Griffiths, just... certainly as a player, as we were saying, you know, as a player, I think he was cracking. And I mean, I remember the kind of season that Dembele kind of first was in the Celtic team, and I remember sizing the two of them up, and I was going like, I mean, I think I remember saying like, oh, I don't know, I mean, I like Dembele, but I mean, Griffiths, man, you can't, he's at the peak of his power, man, you can't just leave him on the bench. And of course, he was just left on the bench for most of the season. But then again, when he would come into the team, he was doing really well. I still think Edward's the main man. Yeah. I don't get any of this about how Griffiths is now the main man now that he's back. I mean, Edward's earned it. He scored Christ knows how many huge goals for Celtic. Did really well over in Sarajevo as well. I thought Edward to get the goal that kind of killed things off over there as well. So I still think he's the main man, but it's great seeing a guy like Griffiths just there, available, and he can score, you know. And it was again that thing where he was standing over the free kick and he was the only one that was doing it, and he knew in his head there was only one place where that free kick was going. So nah, just delighted. Christie looked wild in that game. I was really happy for that as well, because I was a wee bit worried when he got his... Because, I mean, I remember Christie last season coming into the team and, you know, obviously scores that goal at Murrayfield against Hearts, and he just kind of went wild from there, and he was, you know, incredible, unstoppable. And then he got a really bad injury, came back into the team, and then got another bad injury. And you're a wee bit of worried because, you know, in this time, it's a completely different manager, and so much has changed about Celtic since he kind of went out of the team. I was really worried. It was just like, is this just this Rodgers thing of just being able to develop a player, but only for him? Is it one of these things where if Rodgers is out the team, is he not going to progress? And I mean, again, I know maybe not the best opposition that Celtic were up against during the week, but again, just to come in and look like that and play like that, I thought it really gave me a lot of heart that, again, you can kind of say, okay, well, he's back, there's another good midfielder that we've got. And hopefully it takes something off of Callum McGregor, who Celtic were posting a stat saying he played more minutes than any like outfield player in world football last season, and like, what achievement. I'm just like, that's terrifying.
he's an engine. He's an. It's brilliant the progress of McGregor in regards to when he first came in under Dyla. You were like, ah, Ken, like, he was tidy, but he's and there was talk, I remember going and going to Thistle at one point, and Ken, that'll be a decent route. Look at him now. He's just like, he just scores in every big game ever. he's a massive player, man. He's class, he's brilliant. And I say, just Christie coming back in, another option, massive season for him. Very good player. Somebody who's, to be fair, kind of proved me wrong. I'll happily say I thought he was a good player, but I'm not really doing much at Celtic, you know. I'll be like another Scott Allen. But nah, he's far from it. Very technical player, I think he's got to have another massive season. In regards to Celtic, is the point I made earlier about, you can argue that they've maybe regressed, but I know you're expecting them to beat the team on Wednesday night anyway, but 5-0, all these top guys coming back and playing to their peak is only a good thing, and it's just got to get them riled up, and it just makes the second leg hopefully a walk in the park for them, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I certainly hope so.
Mikey Johnson as well. I thought he'd done well against Sarajevo.
The goal line in Sarajevo was an absolute screamer. And it comes at a really good time, because I mean, obviously I've experienced quite a lot of good European results with Celtic, but I mean, I've been there. I remember like Braga, man, Utrecht. Maribor and other kind of horrific games as well. Recently, Legia Warsaw, the first leg, of course, before the second leg, incredible comeback. But you know, I remember these games where, you know, you're away from home, you're really away from home, far from home, and it's like you go 1-0 down. It's like, ah, Jesus Christ, here we go. Like, we know what's coming here, and just to, 25 yards out, just like bang. Okay, there you go. Uh-huh. Catch. it was great, and it's really good to see him. You know, he was able to do it domestically last season, and of course, I mean, again, you know, it's early round qualifiers. It's not the standard that he's going to come up against later on, and hopefully, when Celtic progress in Europe, it's not the standard he's going to come up against. But again, it's good to see he can go to, you know, places like Bosnia and just do that. He's not fazed by it at all.
No, 100%.
From a relatively neutral point of view, I know you have literally said the sentence "I still hate Celtic" on this podcast, but from a relatively neutral point of view, assuming Celtic don't lose their away leg by 6 goals, it's either going to be Cluj or Maccabi Tel Aviv in the next round. Now, this is the round that Celtic went out of last season against AEK Athens. Mm-hmm. How do you think it will go? I'm a pessimist when it comes to European qualifiers, so I'm worried already, but I do trust Lennon with the qualifiers.
Uh-huh.
Because he was able to do it. He did it, I think it was, what, twice with Celtic, take them through God knows how many qualifying rounds. I remember there was like Helsingborg and teams like this he was up against, and then there was obviously Shakhtar Donetsk and things like that. I do kind of trust Lennon when it comes to these qualifiers. You're not as emotionally invested and also pessimistic as myself when it comes to Celtic. How would you see it going against Cluj or Maccabi Tel Aviv, assuming they get through? Which they will.
Well, they will get through. I definitely want to see Celtic going back to Israel.
Israel, yeah, 100%.
Let's see where the solidarity with Palestine lies there. Again, it's just one of those, and it's the old kind of pishy Scotland argument as well about the national team. You fancy Celtic against them at Celtic Park. As relatively as no insightful as that is, or any kind of tactical advice or anything that I've given out there, I just think that Celtic at Parkhead can beat anybody. The atmosphere's electric, and that goes for Rangers and all at Ibrox, to be fair. It's just important for them when they go away maybe you'll be able to clarify this for me.
Right, go for it.
I do not know what system Celtic have been playing, because people are saying it looks a bit dotted around the place. Like, folk are taking totally different interpretations to it. Folk don't know if they're playing three centre backs or no, or what. I don't know. Because the new guy, Bolly, yeah.
We'll go with the Celtic Da pronunciation because we're probably more offensive not even trying to pronounce it than actually.
He's like basically playing like left wing, isn't he? But then you've got Christie in that, like, which on paper looks like they should be playing in the left, but they'll know they're actually playing through the middle and letting that guy out in the left. So I don't. Celtic actually playing three centre halves, or they're playing two.
It appears as if they're playing three centre halves, kind of. Yeah. I think they're supposed to be playing a back four, but I think they're kind of just saying to Bowley, just go for it. We'll have the cover. We'll be able to switch.
Right, and then who is it that's filling in? Beaton.
Kind of,
aye. That makes sense.
It's been
interesting. I watched it, and then I was watching it with one of my mates, and he was just like, "No, that's definitely a back three." I goes, "No, I don't know. I think it's a back four." And folk weren't sure if Ayer was playing right back or no. Like,
Ayer has kind of been playing right back, he's kind of done it before, but like it's weird. Lennon used to do strange things like this in the league as well. When he'd line up with a back, he'd line up with a back three basically, or a back five, where Wanyama used to play centre back. I mean, we're talking ages and ages ago. Uh-huh. But Wanyama would play centre back, and it would kind of just be Kelvin Wilson and Charlie Mulgrew that would kind of be the centre halves. But then things would change. Like Adam Matthews would end up filling in at like right centre half if Mulgrew was going up. It was wild. It was really, really strange. I remember there was a game against St Mirren, and it was just he tried this out, and it was just like I was watching it with my sitting with my uncle who sits really like quite high up at Celtic Park, and I remember just going like I'm gonna just. Like my brain just can't comprehend what's going on here because I'm looking at this and you can see what the formation
it's too complicated.
Is. But yeah, it was just like you this is the perfect angle for looking to see what formation Celtic are playing. I've got no idea. And I can count to 11. Like I can figure out three numbers that will add up to 10 and then you include the goalkeeper. And I'm just like, I've got no idea what's happening here. So I mean maybe he's just doing the same thing. Who knows? Maybe he's just trying to take this time to experiment and just play with crazy formations. But I hope it just doesn't continue when, you know, we go into the lineup and you see it ending up as a 3-2-3-1-1 on wild.
Just reminds me about what Scotland were trying to do under McLeish, and it was just minging, man. It was just like, and it's no like a da hanger, but back to basics, 4-4-2 structured and that, but you're like, just like, it's just horrible to some extent. Like, it's just too complicated. And again, to come back to Kilmarnock, the main thing that everybody says about how good a coach Steve Clarke is just everything simplified, you know what I mean? Like it's just everybody knows their jobs and that, whereas it doesn't look like, well, it's obviously working, you know what I mean, for Celtic. I mean, you know, like, Ken, like, they've won three games, but you're just like, what are they actually playing? But hey, fair enough. But I don't know. Maybe that's
the idea. Maybe Lennon's just trying out formations that you can't coach to prep for because Celtic don't even know what formation they're playing.
I mean, it sounds like the only logical explanation. I mean, don't get me wrong, but I know that teams will play a back four, but they'll let their full backs go high, and then one of the holding midfielders will tuck in. In between the two centre backs, like, you know, Brown was doing that at the start under Rodgers kind of stuff, and like, you know, like basically filling in on our centre half to let the other guys get forward. But this just seems a bit too. I just don't know, man.
I think we're going on about this, and part of the reason I think that Celtic are kind of playing this is because they don't really have a right back or a left back at the moment.
Yeah, well, and, point I'm making with that is, like, because my original point was to go away, they'll have to be structured, you know, to make sure they don't concede and stuff. And with this current lottery formation that they're playing, I don't know whether that's the case, and I can see them leaking goals away from home against better opposition. But I still see them scoring goals, which is, as we all know, how vital the away goal is. But I yes. just think, to play against Tel Aviv and stuff, they've got to just have flat four, and then build for there. I think, and just have your back five. You know what I mean? Keep them back four, just structured, and then let their guys deal with it just against better opposition. That's only kind of that's the point I'm trying to make. Whereas if they're playing us three centre backs and wingers tucking in, and I don't know, I can just see them leaking goals at it. Sorry again, as you said, to try it against teams like St Mirren and stuff, but I just think against better opposition, when it's not really sussed out yet, it could be quite a disaster. But that's just my own interpretation of it.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think you're wrong. I don't think you're wrong. I think we need to. I mean, they've signed this guy from Israel, who's apparently a right back, but everyone from every kind of scouting report is saying he's a centre back that can play right back.
I've seen that. Did he serve in the IDF with any chance? Did he do his national service?
You know, I haven't looked into it. I don't want to know.
I hope it has.
But yeah, I mean, it's kind of reminds me of a funny thing. See, when Lustig signed for Celtic had a real centre back problem, and Lustig signed, and it was also you can play centre half, and he was like, no, I'm a right back. And then that was his first press conference, yeah. And I quite like that. This is kind of the opposite. We've signed this guy, and it's so you can play right back. No, I'm a centre back. I'm really excited for this. Yeah. But as soon as Celtic figure out what's happening with Tierney, whether they want the money for him or not, and whether this guy that they've signed is actually a right back, or Lennon just plays Ralston at right back, or we turn Ayer into a right back, I don't know. But the kind of wide defensive positions, because I've said the word back so many times, I'm going to get away from that. The kind of wide defensive positions we really need to sort out, and we've signed players allegedly to do it, but based on what I've seen, it doesn't look as if they will. So who knows? It's going to be interesting.
Interesting indeed.
But I don't know. I think last season Celtic had a squad and a manager that was better than what they had last season, and they didn't qualify for the Champions League.
Right. That's interesting.
No, I think it was quite a tough draw. I would say AEK Athens, based on everything that I've read and seen, I think Athens were probably a better team than Cluj or Maccabi Tel Aviv. But again, I don't think the squad and the manager's as good as what we had last season. So I'm a wee bit worried.
On a separate point here, do you think Tierney's away?
You know, if you'd asked me that a week ago, I would have said absolutely. I don't know now. I think if it does happen, it's going to happen pretty close to the end. I think it'll happen kind of the final day.
Well, am I right in saying though, here, the English transfer window's only open for another week or two?
I honestly wouldn't know.
I'm sure it is, because I think that they've brought in, so last year, I think, was the first year they've done it.
It closes before the season starts.
Yeah, before the season starts. So 9th of August is when it shuts. So
Maybe. I don't know. I mean, again, it's a lot of money they're talking about. I mean, again, whether it's 18 million up front and then add-ons going up to 25, 18 million's wild. Wow. It's a huge amount of money. But then again, it's not as if English football, they don't have it.
They were talking about that
guy from Palace, it was 50 million, and you're like, well, Tierney's a Scottish internationalist, and, you know, a lot of people, you know, again, I would play him at left back, but I know the captain plays left back. Tierney still plays internationals for Scotland, despite not being the first choice left back. He's played two campaigns in the Champions League. He's done quite well in the Europa League. He's scored goals in the Champions League and the Europa League from left back. And you just need to look at what he's won in Scotland, and he's like still a Wayne, basically. Like, no, but I mean, you know, he's still an incredibly young guy.
I mean, I'm trying to stress this to like my mates, mostly my mates of Rangers persuasion. Who are like, oh, what are they playing at? 25 million for Tierney? Ken? Like, Jesus, I'm like, right, listen. I've got my views on Tierney that you and Kemp are well aware of here. I really don't like him. He's a chest-beating bastard.
Yes.
But he's a good player, right? But I do think at times it's questionable. I think that he can be a wee bit overrated because he's Mr. Celtic, which will make this all the sweeter once he eventually signs for Arsenal, who haven't won anything of note since the Invincibles or whatever.
Yes, oh, they've won the cup occasionally, and
against Hull doesn't count, man.
I think they've been beat in a European Cup final by a team that included Eto'o, Ronaldinho.
Exactly. But I'm like, if Tierney goes down there and they sell him in the cheap, quote unquote cheap, for like what, 15 million or what?
Aye.
And then he has a year or two in England, and the next thing he's valued at 70 million, you know what I mean? I'm like, good on Celtic, like, make them pay. Even though it's probably not going to have a good for like the rest of Scottish football, because it's got to like increase Celtic's like financial
spending power,
like golf over the rest of us. But I want to see our best players going for big money, and it's the same way, just like even Motherwell, the way they stood up to Celtic, like, we all know how that ended up working out. Yeah, you know what I mean? But they agreed 3 million for Turnbull.
If whatever in terms of Turnbull's health wasn't like ghosts, Motherwell would have like kind of won that. If you know what I mean, like Celtic.
Absolutely.
I mean, you know, the pictures have done the rounds of him sitting in the Celtic jersey. Celtic had paid it basically all. they had it counted out waiting there, and it was just one of those ones that was again. So yeah, I mean, Motherwell did well when it came to that, I would say.
How does that work out then? Just like the 3 million transfer, expecting to unveil him, and then like it just goes tits up. And then Peter Law was on the phone to TSB asking to cancel his last payment or something. No, I sent it to the wrong account, mate. Just transfer it back in if that's all right. So, fair play to Celtic because... I want to see our best players. Same way that I want Rangers to sell Morelos for like 15, 20 million, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Sell them for as big as we can get because that's what they do down there for absolute horseshit.
And again, it's one of these things where, I mean, I know he's an incredible, incredible player, but Celtic basically got from a sell-on fee what they sold Van Dijk for.
Mm-hmm. It's just, as you say, it's nuts.
Like, just cut out the middle, man. Instead of selling them for 12 and getting 8 million on a sell-on fee, we'll just take the 20 million.
Exactly. Yeah. Not with that. So, as much as I don't like Tierney as a person, I think he's a horrible person. I've actually heard he might be quite sound than that, but you know my views on him, so I'm not going to repeat them. But let him. Aye, play hardball with these guys because they've got the money there. Make them pay it. Same way that I hope that if MD ever comes, well, who'd like to take your players recently? Who knows? But play hardball. Don't sell them for anything below their...
Mm-hmm.
Well, no, don't... Obviously don't sell them below their worth, but sell them for, what, 5, 10 million in Tappy, what they're... In real terms, what they're actually worth. Because...
Yeah, like market value just isn't a thing anymore. Nah. Just sell them for as much as anyone else is willing to pay for it. Nah, like, in terms of it's just like, oh, he's a £15 million rated player. Nah, just get more for him. Why not?
I mean,
money doesn't matter to most of these clubs. Like, just go for it.
I mean, this is why capitalism's pulled more people out of poverty than any other economic system.
The most successful economic system in the world. Ever.
Exactly.
We're talking about spending £25 million for a teenager to kick a ball around.
Yes.
Well, Tierney's 20-something now, isn't he?
I mean, it's just disappointing, just on that. I mean, the gross transfer fees, I mean, all this money should be got to our armed forces and the NHS and stuff, like... I just think that share if you think a soldier should get the same wages as a football player. Absolutely, I'm on that boat.
It's coming soon, man. It's coming soon. When hard Brexit's fully implemented, when the revolution starts, the football clubs will be the they'll be the first targets of the pillaging, man. I'm excited for it.
Yeah, it's got to happen, isn't it?
Because it's interesting though, because it's one of these things about, you know, how like economic systems around the world, basically economies have become interlinked, and you know, capital can flow really quickly from one country to another. The way football works, obviously, is that you can't really move a club out of a country. So when like hard Brexit comes and the economy just tanks and football then is basically the only industry in the country that'll have any money, you can't kind of move that all out. So I'm really excited for like the French Revolution style with the pitchforks at Old Trafford, just, you know, getting ready, man. Because it's I suppose you can move the capital out, but you can't move where you play the football out of it.
That's sad.
Although I'm sure UEFA would change the rules on it to allow them to do that.
Oh, absolutely.
As soon as there's a threat to capital, they'll change it. Anyway.
I agree wholeheartedly, Gander. Agree.
So anyway, yes, that's our opinions on the Tierney transfer. Get your pitchforks ready, but not for that reason. I mean, Callum, is there anything else we kind of need to cover? I mean, we were deciding to just kind of do this as a kind of brief impromptu podcast, kind of covering European fortunes. I thought it was important to get your opinions on Kilmarnock's European journey and the Mandela effect that has happened, that's meant you're no longer playing in Europe. Is there anything else I feel we need to cover, or do you want to wrap it up today?
Well, I mean, with all respect, I think that we've covered everything.
Xenophobia in the media.
Yeah, I think that regardless of what I say in this moment in time won't matter, because I think everybody would have switched it off after 15 minutes after me going schizo about Kilmarnock. I'm quite content with that.
I mean, again, as I was saying, it is kind of, I know we didn't really have a season review at the end of last season, and we haven't really had a season preview. We will be back soon to kind of talk more in depth about Scottish football's going on. Callum, I'm hoping you'll be able to join us for that.
We'll see what happens next Sunday.
Yeah, the league's starting next week, so it'll be good to be back and chatting.
Yeah,
Scottish football more regularly. Callum, if that's indeed everything, then thank you very much for coming on and inventing.
Thanks very much for having me, Gamba, and thanks to the listeners if you're still listening.
If you're still indeed listening, thank you very much. Thank you for tuning back in. We'll be back. We don't know exactly when, but we will be back. So thank you very much for listening. Take care. Bye bye.